Right now, South Africa is bleeding like 15% of its precious water supply right into the dirt through leaky municipal pipes. And, while that's happening, they're simultaneously crushing their road networks under 40 billion ton kilometers of freight.
Yeah, it's a massive, massive strain.
It really is. So today, welcome to our deep dive into South Africa's National Infrastructure Plan 2050, or NIP 2050. We are unpacking how a developing nation plans to spend over 6 trillion rand by 2040 to just completely rewire its energy, water, transport, and digital networks.
Right, and honestly, looking at these sources, it is a monumental task.
The best analogy I can think of for you listeners is, well, it's like attempting to perform open heart surgery on a country while is currently running a marathon.
That is a really good way to put it. You have a nation trying to fundamentally restructure its foundational systems without, stopping the daily operations of its economy.
Exactly, which is incredibly risky but absolutely necessary for survival. I mean, you cannot run a marathon without a heartbeat.
No, you can't. And for an economy, that heartbeat is energy. The plan actually projects that energy demand will double by 2050.
Wow, double.
Yeah, double. They need to ramp up capacity to a staggering 174 gigawatts, which is basically like building their entire current power grid over again from scratch.
That's wild. And the plan dictates a massive pivot away from their legacy coal monopoly toward a decentralized mix of solar, wind, and nuclear power.
So, okay, let's unpack this.
Sure, that's it.
How does a country just switch off coal, which has been its primary energy source for decades, without causing a massive economic heart attack?
Well, they aren't just pulling the plug overnight. The sources detail what the plan calls a just transition. This involves carefully repurposing the existing coal fleet over time.
To protect the workers, right?
Exactly, to protect the workers and the communities tied to it. But the mechanism that actually makes this feasible is how they are democratizing the grid. They lifted the licensing limit for private embedded generation from 1 megawatt all the way up to 100 megawatts. Wait, so they lifted the cap to 100 megawatts. But practically, how does adding a bunch of decentralized private corporate grids stabilize a national network? Doesn't that just, I don't know, create energy inequality where rich companies have power and everyone else is left in the dark?
It is a valid concern, for sure. But think of it this way. The old system was like a single massive mainframe computer that crashes the whole office when it goes down.
Right.
The new approach is more like a network of laptops. By allowing, say, a mining company or a large factory to generate its own 100 megawatts of solar power, you are taking that massive demand off the national grid.
I see. So it frees up capacity for everyday citizens.
Exactly. It reduces the risk of nationwide blackouts while the larger structural transition takes place.
Okay, so we stabilize the power grid with these private solar arrays, but those new solar plants are kind of useless if the heavy freight trucks delivering the panels destroy the roads on the way there.
Which absolutely happens.
Right. And that brings us to transport and water. Because right now, a staggering 90% of non-bulk freight is stuck on the roads. The goal is to shift 40 billion ton kilometers back onto the rail network.
Which is basically the weight of tens of millions of cars.
Yeah, it's massive. And simultaneously, the country is facing a projected 10 to 15% water deficit by 2030, mostly because of failing infrastructure and climate change. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You have a country bleeding its precious water supply through those leaky municipal pipes we mentioned earlier, while simultaneously crushing its road networks under heavy freight trucks.
Right, and what's fascinating here is how the solution isn't just pouring more concrete. It is about changing how the concrete is managed. The state is establishing an independent port authority and a national water resources infrastructure agency.
Wait, but why does creating just another government agency actually solve the problem?
Well, because it changes the financial mechanics. By making the port authority independent, it divorces port revenues from the general national budget.
Oh, so the money generated by the ports can actually be reinvested directly into maintenance.
Exactly. Rather than being swallowed up by unrelated government deficits, it shifts the culture from reactive run to failure maintenance, where you only fix a pipe when it bursts, to proactive, full life cycle asset management.
Got it. You design, maintain, and fund these assets so they last decades.
Yes, exactly.
But, none of these physical fixes matter if the systems can't communicate with each other. The trains, the pipes, the solar grids, everything needs a nervous system to run efficiently.
Which is why universal digital access is the final pillar. The mandate is clear. They want 10 megabits per second broadband for 100% of the population by 2030.
Wow, 100%.
100%. But here is the reality check. To achieve that and to hit all these ambitious targets across energy, water, and transport, there is a massive 2.15 trillion rand funding gap.
2.15 trillion rand. The government clearly doesn't have that just sitting in a vault somewhere.
They don't. And that is why the plan explicitly forces the government to abandon the idea of going it alone. They have to partner with the private sector.
And I imagine this isn't just asking corporations for charity.
No, it's about structuring long-term concessions. For example, a private telecom company might fund the fiber optic cables in a rural area, and in exchange, they get a guaranteed 20-year operational contract.
Okay. So the private sector brings the upfront capital and technical efficiency, while the state ensures the service actually reaches the public.
Exactly. It's a mutual dependency.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? If a nation's infrastructure reflects its deepest values, what happens to the fabric of society when the very foundations of how you get your power, water, and data become entirely decentralized?
It fundamentally changes the relationship between the citizen and the state.
Right. You go from relying on a centralized single heartbeat to relying on a distributed shared network to keep the marathon runner alive. It's definitely something for you to ponder until our next deep dive.